and good morning. Welcome to another edition of Health Essentials. Hi, I'm Dr. Roy Morgan. Welcome to a beautiful Saturday morning. I had two female listeners make a request of me. They wanted me to talk about vitamin D3 today. And vitamin D3 is the active form of that fat-soluble vitamin that's made within your body. Of course, in order to get there, you need cholesterol to do that. And so if your body has cholesterol, as long as you're moving and you're living, you have cholesterol. I personally believe it's impossible for the body to make all the cholesterol that you need. You might need to get some from your diet. Of course, I may part ways with many people on that topic. But anyway, if you have cholesterol and you expose your skin to ultraviolet radiation from the sun, you know, that invisible wavelength of light, that causes a chain reaction to take place. And in this chain reaction, your body is able to manufacture, mainly within your kidneys, the form of vitamin D called vitamin D3 or cholecalciferol. And from there, it's converted into the most active form in your kidneys called calcitriol. Anyway, so what I thought I would do, and these women, they told me I could use their names. And the names are unusual. One woman, her name is Wim, that's W-I-M, and the other one's Hootie. I'll let you try to figure out the spelling. I'm not really sure how to spell Hootie, but that's just the way it is. So what I thought I'd do is I'd just explain, and again, I'm just trying to oversimplify everything. Would you agree with me that in order for our bodies to function optimally, we have to give it the very thing that it needs? So you never, ever want to underestimate what can happen to your body when you give it the very substance that it requires to produce optimal health. Years ago, I was reading an article, and I think it had something to do with where does vitamin D actually go once it is in the human body? And so whether you take it in the form of a supplement or you make it by exposing your skin to ultraviolet light, well, what does your body do with it? Where does it go? Does it concentrate in the bloodstream? Does it go straight to the brain? Does it end up in the heart? What do your lungs do with it? Tell me about the kidneys one more time. Well, to make a long story short, when they've attached a radioactive isotope to a molecule of vitamin D3, they ask the question, we're going to follow this and find out where it goes. It's almost like you're putting a homing or a tracking device on a bird or an animal. I don't know why I'm thinking about a grizzly bear. I hear they run pretty fast. But if they wanted to find out where does a grizzly bear travel over the course of the next 3 months, well, if they put some type of a homing device or a radio collar over them, they might say, oh my goodness, we didn't realize it, but the grizzly bear's traveled 17 miles. He doesn't leave this 17-mile radius anyway. But when they add a radioactive isotope to the vitamin D3, they're just asking the question, we want to see where this stuff ends up. And so you remember taking biology classes, or if you haven't yet, maybe you're too young to have taken biology. We have what are called cells. And let's just say, for example, you have a cell that makes up your liver, or a grouping of cells that make up your liver. Well, one of the hallmarks of a cell is it has what's called a cell wall. Then it has that inner lining called the cell membrane. And then the gooey gelatinous stuff on the inside is called cytoplasm. But near the center of the cell, you have what's called the cell's nucleus. And if we go inside the nucleus, that's where you have your genetic material, sometimes called your DNA. This is your most unique blueprint or fingerprint of life. Just like every human being on the earth has a very unique retina, or they have a very unique pattern to their fingerprint, there's no two alike. You have a very unique genetic blueprint called your DNA. And so DNA, or inside the nucleus of the cell, this is where all the action takes place. It gives your body commands to make repairs, or what if those switches aren't flipped in your DNA and those repairs aren't made because genes are very sluggish? Well, that's partly what I'm going to try to reference when it comes to the use of the fat-soluble vitamin vitamin D3. By the way, you could literally, in the year 2020, you can walk into any store and you can probably find vitamin D3. I mean, if it sells food. That's what I should have said. So whether it's a health food store, or it's a pharmacy, or a grocery store, I bet you, or a discount store, you could probably find all the vitamin D3 that you want. And you're probably thinking to yourself, well, tell us once again, what does vitamin D3 do? Well, my simplified version of what it does is, it makes sure when you have enough of it, it's like anything else, there's a rate limiting factor there. You got to have enough of it to get the job done. But if you have enough vitamin D3, guess what happens? All of a sudden, your DNA and your genes, they start flipping all these switches and making all these commands that are in your best interest. And maybe on a different level, we could call this healing, 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 and repair, repair, repair. What happens if repairs aren't being made? What happens if those appropriate switches that you need vitamin D3 for to flip, what if they're not flipped? That's when you have health problems. I know that you have access to a smartphone, a computer. If you don't, you can go to the library and look on that computer. But now you can just type in vitamin D3 and you can say, how does this affect me? And so what I want you to think of in terms today is, what would be an optimal level versus what would be a deficient level? I'm probably not going to have to spend much time talking about toxicity or too much, because that's a pretty unusual occurrence. I know it can happen. I'm acknowledging that. But personally, it's very, very unusual for me to see a person get a lab test for vitamin D3 and it to be super-duper elevated or to a level of toxicity. It is possible. I mean, you may remember in London, England, they accidentally put millions of units of vitamin D in milk, and then they shipped the milk to the orphanage. Well, if I'm not mistaken, 11 children died because it caused their heart to turn to stone or to calcify. And so, yes, even though that would be kind of a rare occurrence, it can happen. I'm certain it was an accident. I know, but if it was your child, you wouldn't want them to die. So let me present this for your information. Just think about this, and I'm going to cover a whole bunch of different topics, so I think I have a lot for almost every listener. So here goes. You know, during the wintertime, which is the way it is right now, it's just going to be the way it is. There's going to be more people that die from cardiovascular disease during the wintertime than they do in the summertime. And maybe one of the reasons is because when the weather's bad and it's cold, people don't want to go outside and they don't want to sit on the back porch while the sun's coming on their bare skin and it's freezing cold outside. But that's how your body makes vitamin D. You've got to have enough sun time. So what do you do if you have darker skin? Well, if you have darker skin, you have more natural God-given pigments. And so it takes longer for you to make vitamin D3 than it does somebody else. And so listen to this right here, and I'm going to quote some numbers. But I bet anything, at least half the listening audience, when they go to their doctor, they just simply request, I would like you to measure my vitamin D3 levels. Because, number one, you can't just assume that everything's A-okay. You can't. And plus, with modern lab tests, they are super-duper fabulous. You can get a very precise reading. It can tell you exactly if your number is at 47 or if it's 52. And the way that they measure it, usually vitamin D3, it's called 2,5-OHD. That's just the cholecalciferol. That's the active form of vitamin D3, so that's what they measure. But there's going to be a numerical range that's given to it. It's measured in nanograms per milliliters. So if you haven't heard this before, just sit back and hang on. It says here in the research that the risk of having a heart attack is twice as high for those with vitamin D levels less than 34. So if you have your test nearby and you say, you know what, I remember seeing that they did the vitamin D3 test, I'm going to go check that real quick. And so that's the only number they looked at. The line of demarcation was drawn on the number 34 as it relates to vitamin D3. So below 34, you had twice the risk of having a heart attack as compared to those above 34. Do you think that could be significant? Well, yes. And my initial point that I was trying to sell you on was there's an optimal level for this vitamin. And it's in your best interest to make sure you have the proper level of this vitamin, because things go very well when you have enough of what you need to make sure everything's working right. What would happen to you if you didn't have enough water? Well, that'd be called dehydration. Now, here's another one. They go on to write in this research study that patients that had congestive heart failure, I know that you know what congestive heart failure is. That's when a person is so tired and so weak, and they have all this fluid in their legs. That's because with congestive heart failure, the heart is so weak it cannot pump blood with enough force to get it through the kidneys so the kidneys can filter, so the fluid builds up. And that fluid is toxic. So patients with congestive heart failure were recently found to have, lo and behold, markedly lower levels of vitamin D3 than people that didn't have congestive heart failure. And so a vitamin D deficiency as a cause of heart failure has been documented in many, as in thousands, of case reports. Well, you're probably saying to me, I don't have issues with heart disease, Dr. Morgan. All I have is high blood pressure. Well, that's still connected at the hip to the heart, isn't it? If your heart pumps blood, what happens if your blood pressure goes up to 220 over 105? Well, that means that your heart is having to work so much harder. Is that really what you want? Do you want your heart to work harder? No. You want it to do just the right amount of work. Have you ever heard the phrase, the candle that burns too bright is going to burn out? Something like that. In this one study on hypertension or high blood pressure, the author goes on to write that it's been long known that blood pressure is much higher in the winter than in the summer. It increases when you have a greater distance from the equator. That means less light. So you think about going north to Canada, you may not get so much ultraviolet radiation from the sun. And so here we go. When patients with high blood pressure, that, or if you want to say hypertension, that's the correct medical term, when they were treated with ultraviolet light three times a week, that's the only way they did this. They didn't even give them vitamin D. They just exposed their body to ultraviolet light. For 6 weeks, their vitamin D levels increased by 162%. So that's what happened. They exposed their skin to ultraviolet light, and their vitamin D levels raised or increased by 162%. And it showed that their blood pressure fell significantly. Now get this, this was impressive to me also. In a different study, they have shown that even small amounts of oral cholecalciferol, that's the same thing as vitamin D3. How much did they use in this study? Only 800 IUs. I sure wouldn't call that a big dose, would you? I wouldn't. When they gave 800 IUs of vitamin D3 for 8 weeks, it lowered both the blood pressure and the person's heart rate. Well, you're probably going to ask a question, well, is heart rate, is that important? Oh, yeah, that's real important. I don't have the study in front of me, but I remember it. If we look at the number 78, and when I say 78, I'm referring to the average times that your heart beats per minute. So if you have a heart rate monitor that you're wearing, or you have some type of app on your phone, or you have a Fitbit with a laser diode that measures your heart rate, you can literally find out real quick, oh, well, this is pretty good. My heart rate is 59 beats a minute, or mine is 64 beats a minute, or 67. See, if you're laying in bed right now and you say, okay, I haven't been doing anything. I'm not running up and down stairs. I'm not shoveling snow. Not doing yard work right exactly yet. So if you measure your resting heart rate and it's 60 beats a minute, I'd say that's a pretty good deal. I like that. But what if it's 78 beats a minute or higher? That is not good. Studies have shown that if your resting heart rate is 78 beats a minute or higher, you're in trouble. Now, you can counter that and say, but hey, I'm as healthy as a horse. I'm perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with me. Yes, but you're also very smart. And if you know what the research shows, that 78 or higher is trouble around the corner, then I think it'd be good to take advantage of that information. So in this study, even very small amounts of vitamin D3, that would be 800 units for 8 weeks, it lowered both blood pressure and the heart rate, which means your heart doesn't have to work as hard. I guess the point I was really trying to get to, I know this is overkill, but do you really want your heart struggling to keep up with a massive workload? No. I mean, yeah, there's times it works harder, but that's actually probably pretty good for it. Like if you go for a brisk walk for 30 minutes, or you go to the gym and you work out, you have that brief window where you put a little bit of stress on your heart, and it may actually benefit you later on where your heart rate's actually lower. Well, you're probably saying, I don't have heart disease or blood pressure problems, Dr. Morgan. My problem is diabetes. Okay. They've shown that even if you're a healthy adult and you don't have diabetes, that study's too complicated. All I was trying to say is when you're low in vitamin D3 or there's not enough of it, your blood sugar tends to go up. That's really what I should have said. And the authors, the author of this one study compared with the number one drug that's prescribed for diabetes. It's called metformin. I'm sure you've heard of that. No doubt there are at least two people listening that are prescribed metformin. They've noticed that with metformin, which improves your insulin sensitivity by 13%, insulin is a hormone that helps open the door of the cell so sugar from your bloodstream can go in there and it can travel to the mitochondria and it can be burned for fuel. So they're showing that metformin improves insulin sensitivity by 13%. But lo and behold, when you head closer to optimal or higher vitamin D levels in your blood, there was a 60% improvement in insulin sensitivity. So you tell me, metformin improves insulin sensitivity by 13% compared to optimal vitamin D3 at 60%? Oh, interesting. Another study I came across, it showed in a clinical trial where they just gave, I don't know why they chose this number, but this was the number they chose. But at least I'm not making it up. So if you took 1,000, I'm sorry, if you were a woman that had type 2 diabetes, no men were in the study, but if you were a woman and you took orally 1,332 IUs of vitamin D a day for just 3 days, now the study was small. They only used 10 women. I know a lot of times they kind of poo-poo that idea, but they showed that the end of 30 days, just with 1,332 units of vitamin D3, it improved insulin sensitivity by 21%. Folks, that's a big deal. So if you're prone to type 2 diabetes, why don't you consider maybe vitamin D3, things could go much better. Your body could work more efficiently. Well, what if none of these relate to you? What if you say, that is not my problem, Dr. Morgan. My problem is I have arthritis. Well, you may have heard before that the most common form of arthritis, sometimes it's called the wear and tear arthritis, you know, where you go to bed feeling relatively good after moving all day, but you wake up really stiff in the morning. That's called osteoarthritis. And so most physicians, if you go to see a doctor and they do a bone density test and they say, oh, your DEXA score is minus 1.7 of your lower lumbar spine, you have osteopenia. Or they say your femoral neck from your thigh bone, that's like minus 2.8. Uh-oh, you have osteoporosis. Well, doctors know that vitamin D has been shown to be extremely beneficial at treating bone loss. I mean, you're just giving the body the very thing it needs to function properly. That's all I'm trying to say. But most people don't know, or they haven't heard, that vitamin D levels, they play a huge role on how a person might be vulnerable toward developing arthritis. I'm just like you. I have normal needs at the store. And so if I go to the store to purchase a trash bag or to purchase black pepper or to purchase, you know, lemons, which the woman at the store the other day made fun of me by buying my organic lemons. She says, "You're wasting your money." I said, "Well, but I don't think I am." Anyway, but there was a study called, I mean, this is one of the biggest medical studies that's ever been done. It's called the Framingham Study. It comes out of Framingham, Massachusetts. And they, which, you know where I'm going with this. Well, if you don't, I'll tell you. You can't go a month or two just by sitting in church services and hearing the announcements that you do not hear that someone is scheduled to have a knee replacement. That means their knee joint, which this is my opinion, but I personally believe that the knee is absolutely the most complicated, sophisticated joint in all the body. It's not as simple as just a hinge like what your door, you know, pivots on when you open and close a door. But in this Framingham study, it showed that arthritis of the knee progressed more rapidly in those that had vitamin D levels that were lower than the number 36. And they measured that in, they have a number, it's, or a letter, NG, that stands for nanograms. And there's a forward slash with an ML after it for milliliters. So if you look at your vitamin D levels and they are lower than 36 nanograms per milliliter, oh my goodness, you are asking for a more rapid progression of arthritis. So just consider this. The next one. You're saying, well, I don't have a need for a knee replacement. My knee's fine. Well, guess what they found? Another study found that osteoarthritis of the hip progressed more rapidly in those with vitamin D levels lower than 30. Folks, that is not hard to find a person. I saw a woman the other day, her levels were 7. Yes, that could be potentially the world record. Probably not. But, I mean, it's one of the lowest levels I've ever seen. But it is not uncommon at all for me to see a person's lab work and it come back in the teens or the 20s, which is way too low. That's why I'm giving this information. Another study, they took 10 patients that had the autoimmune disease multiple sclerosis. Now, one of the unique features of multiple sclerosis is there's some issue where your immune system is triggered to attack that myelin sheath or that outer coating of the wiring, or the nerves, I should say. And so they did a clinical trial with 10 women that had multiple sclerosis. I think it says the author's name was Goldberg, Fleming, and Picard. If I'm not mistaken, Picard is like a starship commander in outer space or something, so I find it intriguing that he's doing studies on multiple sclerosis, but hey, way to go. Way to spend your free time doing some good for your fellow man. So in this study, they gave 1,000 milligrams of calcium, 600 milligrams of magnesium, and 5,000 IUs. And the way they got this, the way they got their vitamin D3, the 5,000 IUs, it came from 20 grams of cod liver oil. Just thought I'd tell you the source. And they gave these 10 women the calcium, magnesium, and the 5,000 IUs of vitamin D3 for 2 years. And they found there was a very significant reduction in the number of exacerbations of the multiple sclerosis. And there was a complete absence of adverse side effects, meaning they could not tell that the vitamin D3 had any toxic quality to it. One of the reasons this is important, this is one of the very, very few human studies that employed what I would call a sufficient amount of vitamin D. That's 5,000 IUs. And they had a sufficient duration. They didn't do it for 30 days, even though there's plenty of studies that show it works well for that. Anyway, very beneficial to an autoimmune disease. Now, this next one right here, this is occurring more and more, and you gotta believe me. In no way am I wanting to be critical. I'm just trying to be, you know, the herald here, trying to deliver information. But the topic is type 1 diabetes, which is definitely becoming more and more common. Now, similar to multiple sclerosis, which is an autoimmune disease that affects, or the immune system begins to attack the nervous system, well, when it comes to type 1 diabetes, one of the reasons why a person would have type 1 diabetes is because the immune system, they start attacking and destroying the beta cells of the pancreas, so a person can no longer manufacture insulin. Well, lo and behold, vitamin D3 supplementation shows a significant preventative, especially in animal models. So let me read this to you right here. In a study, this is a human study. I went from an animal to a human. Sorry, I'm not trying to compare the two. But anyway, in a study with more than 10,000 human participants, the researcher's name is H-Y-P-P-O-N-E-N, Hyponen, I'm guessing, et al. He showed that supplementation in infants, and we're talking about a brand new baby that's less than a year of age, they gave them 2,000 IUs of vitamin D3. So if you're a pediatrician, do not freak out. Don't freak out and say that's too much. They had no adverse reaction. But when they gave kids that were less than a year old 2,000 IUs of vitamin D a day, that reduced the incidence of type 1 diabetes by 80%. Hey, that is huge. Now, the reason that I said I'm not trying to be negative, because one point that I might make is, and I'm not asking us to go backwards and to be negative, but when you're pregnant, you've only got one window of opportunity to try to make sure the child has absolutely the greatest chance at nutrition. You can't really eat ding-dongs, donuts, Twinkies, drink alcohol, soda waters, Cokes, and eat junk food and expect the baby to have all the nutrients it needs to grow. Anyway, so if mama is really low in vitamin D, which that's, to me, is very, very common. Actually, if you're pregnant right now, you might want to just write on a sticky note that you want to check your vitamin D3 levels, because you want to give your child every possible opportunity to do a great job. Anyway, that's huge right there. 10,000 participants, it netted a result of 80% less occurrence in type 1 diabetes. That's a big deal if you ask me. If you ask me, we should talk about this more, because this is in the realm of possibilities for everyone. If you have infants, if you have toddlers, if you have children that are still growing, yes, and this is just one selected point. Obviously, there's a lot of minerals and a lot of vitamins, both fat and water-soluble, that the human being requires to maintain and have great health. I'm just choosing one of them. Now, listen to this right here. I want you to consider that some people really, really, really struggle this time of year when it comes to depression. As a matter of fact, there's a condition that's known as SAD, and that's just an acronym for Seasonal Affective Disorder. And that is a particular, unique subtype of depression that where people feel just really low, they're not really super, super enjoying life during the winter months, but when they don't have access to vitamin D3 from sunshine exposure, they may be just a little bit more prone to being down and blue and depressed. And so recently, they've tried two things. They said, okay, what do we do here when somebody has been diagnosed with SAD? Do we give them healthy doses of ultraviolet light? I think that's a brilliant call. Of course, you call it sunbathing or a sunbath, right? So what they did was they tried giving 100,000 IUs of vitamin D3. They gave an injection. You're probably thinking to me, whoa, that is way, way, way too much. Well, they found it perked these women right back up. 100,000 units of vitamin D3 after 1 month. I think they gave them 100,000 units once a week, but if we probably broke that down, if there are 7 days in a week, I'm trying to think. Would that be 15? I know that goes a little over 100,000, but if you took 15,000 units of vitamin D3 a day, I did not say forever, but for just a very short season, but it's been shown that if a woman or a man is really low in vitamin D3, and all of a sudden they take it, their body is going to drink it up, just like you would if you were dehydrated and you needed water. Another study I found right here, in a study involving 44 subjects, supplementation with either 400 or 800 IUs per day was found to significantly improve mood within 5 days of supplementation. You could take an antidepressant, and it may not give you any benefit or payoff as far as your mood for 3 weeks, sometimes even longer. But even when they gave just very small amounts of vitamin D3, they used either 400 or 800 IUs of vitamin D3, and within 5 days, they found a significant improvement in mood. So what if you're feeling really low and down right now? Check with your doctor, absolutely. Make sure it's fine. But maybe a little shot of vitamin D3 for a few days may be just the boost that you need to feel like your old self again. And remember, what does vitamin D do? It makes sure that your DNA or your genetic code can play out all the very best possible commands. That is what you want. I have so many articles, it's just unbelievable, so I'm going to kind of cut to the chase because we're almost out of time. But there was a couple that I wanted to hit. And let me hit this last one right here, and then I'll go to the phones and try to answer whatever phone calls you've got. But I am not trying to say that vitamin D3 is a super drug of all drugs. But it sure does cover a whole lot of bases, doesn't it? But let me end with this one right here. And I'm reading the article, so I'll give the quote to who it comes from. So this has to do with people that experience pain. You probably don't even know anybody that hurts or has pain, right? Patients with non-traumatic, meaning they were not run over by a train. So patients with non-traumatic, persistent. What does persistent mean? I think you know. That means it's consistently, continually there, right? So persistent musculoskeletal pain, they showed an impressively high prevalence of an overt vitamin D deficiency. Let me read that one more time to make sure you and I are on the same page on this. Patients with non-traumatic, that means if they're a patient, they're going to a doctor saying, I hurt, can you help me? Patients with non-traumatic persistent musculoskeletal pain, they show an impressively high prevalence of overt vitamin D deficiency. And so let me frame this a different way. Your back hurts all the time. It never stops hurting. It gets a little bit better, but you do something to throw it out. It's your weak link. Could you just listen to this and just see if maybe this could give you some hope that you could improve yourself? Well, I mean, this is my opinion, but you'd be a fool not to listen to this. So here's the name of the researchers right here. Politnikov, I'm guessing he's Russian, and Quigley, definitely Australian. Actually, no, that's incorrect. Matthew Quigley is from Texas. Never mind. Y'all have never seen that movie called Quigley. Never mind. I need to talk about health today. So Politnikov and Quigley, they recently showed that 93% of their 150 patients with persistent, nonspecific musculoskeletal pain were overtly deficient in vitamin D. I mean, that's a big finding. I guess the question is now, what are you going to do about it? A researcher by the name of Masood et al., he found a high prevalence of vitamin D deficiency in children with limb pain. What does that tell you? If your kids say, my legs are sore, Mom, or my arms are aching, you need to pay attention to them. So he found a high prevalence of vitamin D deficiency in children with limb pain. And guess what the solution was? Finally, somebody's doing a good job. And vitamin D supplementation ameliorated I think that's a fancy word for it, made it go away. The pain within 3 months. See there, you kind of get the idea here that it wasn't in one day. That's kind of why I'm throwing this information out there or sharing it with you. If your kids have leg and arm pain, it took 3 months. Now listen, this one right here, this will be the last one I cover. This was impressive to me. Two researchers, Al Farhaj, it's F-A-R-A-J, I'm sorry I butchered that, please forgive me, and Al Mutari. So Al Farhaj and Al Mutari, they found vitamin D deficiency in 83% of their 299 patients with low back pain. I didn't say patients with headaches. That's a topic I chose not to cover, even though that's huge when it comes to vitamin D. So there are nearly 300 patients with low back pain. And when they supplemented, oh, this is crazy, folks, crazy. They gave them 5,000 to 10,000 IUs per week. Per day. And this led to a nearly 100% pain reduction. I'm sorry, I didn't read that correctly. I thought I had it memorized, forgive me. Al Farhaj and Al Mutari, they found vitamin D deficiency in 83% of their 299 patients with low back pain. And when they gave them 5,000 to 10,000 IUs of vitamin D3 per day, that led to a pain reduction in nearly 100%. Now, it doesn't say the pain completely went away, but that's pretty impressive that across the board, they had nearly 100% of patients that said, we hurt a whole lot less. Now, I did look up that study years ago, and it showed a large percentage. I do not remember. Oh, my goodness. They had complete resolution of pain. So, anyway, let's put this on hold right now. Let me give you the phone number here at the station. It's 903-586-5257. This program is titled Health Essentials. Well, I would say that's what we're doing today. Uh-oh, I forgot to push the button. I just did. Welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a question about stiffness in your joints. I can, stretch and walk around everything, and I'll be just fine. I can sit down for, less than 5 minutes and then try to get up again, and it's like I've got to start all over to try to get the stiffness and the pain out. What causes that?
Well, let me answer it first, then I want to ask you a couple questions, all right?
Okay.
Let's just say that you could not tell me, about your diet and your lifestyle and your family history, and I was just making a guess. Well, my guess would be if I could convince you to start taking a little bit of magnesium, I think that would be a very good move in the right direction. Now, what I'm trying to be careful of, don't take it as me saying that I'm promising you the moon, the stars. If you take a little bit of magnesium, all of a sudden this will go away. But I think it will be one component that will be a valuable, supplement for you to consider.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I want to consider is there is one unique fat-soluble vitamin called vitamin K2. And one of the main roles of vitamin K2 is to make sure that calcium, that you get from eating salmon or broccoli or, Swiss cheese or yogurt, the calcium goes where it's supposed to, which is in the bony matrix. It belongs in your bone and your teeth. But one of the hallmarks of having calcium build up in locations it doesn't belong is you get pretty stiff. So if you sit on the floor to, say, organize a scrapbook or some photographs or do some work on the floor, if you sit there Indian style, you're not getting up after 15 minutes, are you, without pain?
Oh, I'm certainly not.
But I would guess that you probably have a very significant deficiency of what's called vitamin K2. Sometimes okay. it's either called minoquinone 4 or minoquinone 7, which I think there was a lady that referred to that the other week, but it's called vitamin K2.
Do I take that more than once a day?
Well, I think it would be wise if you took it morning and lunch, if you could do that, or if you want to take it lunch and evening. And I think the studies show that you absorb it a little bit better, but it's called vitamin K2. Now, there is an illegal street drug called vitamin K2.
Oh.
So if I see you talking to some shady character on a street corner, I'm going to run up and say, ma'am, that's not the K2 I was talking about.
I would come to your aid. You know that, don't you?
Yeah.
So if you I'm sorry.
I had increased my magnesium, but I don't know if I'm still taking enough. And I was just taking the K2 like once. And I might take it every day for a while, and I might not. But
you're going to have to get over. You're going to have to get over the number 1,000 in the supplement. So if you look at the label of your supplement, it says it only contains 100.
Oh, uh-huh.
Just get to 1,000. That's more therapeutic. And the other thing that I would really try to sell you on today, well, I have a bunch of ideas, but if it were me, I'd take cod liver oil. If you want to start lubricating your joints, cod liver oil is one thing that you can try. And the thing of it is, it doesn't take long to figure out if this stuff is working.
Okay.
The other thing that I want to delve into, and let me just say this. If we look at the state inside of the continental United States that absolutely has the highest arthritis and stiffness, it's Mississippi. And so anything that would create the circumstances that you would have inflammation of the joints and arthritis, not good. They happen to have the lowest sulfur content of any soil on the planet.
Hmm.
Well, maybe not the planet. That was a stretch. How about in the U.S.? Let me say that. Where it's the state that has the lowest arthritis and stiffness, that's Oregon. They just so happen to have the highest amount of sulfur in their soil. So when you eat foods like asparagus, which technically, if you look at the medical research on eating asparagus, it's very famous for helping arthritis.
Okay. Are there supplements for sulfur?
Yes. One is called one is called MSM.
Okay.
That could be a game changer for you.
Okay.
Now your body does manufacture sulfur on or makes a conversion of an inactive to an active form of sulfur just through exposing your body to sunlight. So It's only 38 degrees outside right now. You should go sunbathe immediately.
I think I'll go back to bed. No.
Ma'am, you have to start following my recommendations if you want to be extra spry when you're 110. So yeah, you could get MSM. That's probably one of the easier ones. There's also one called glucosamine sulfate. There's chondroitin sulfate. And it may be that you've heard some of your girlfriends at church say, "Oh my goodness, 3 months ago I was really stiff all the time, but now that I'm taking glucosamine sulfate, I'm in a much, much better place." Would you believe me if I told you that I came across a study, and this study is maybe 5 years old? I didn't catch it when it came out, of course. That's not unusual for me. There's just too much to keep up with. I can't follow everything. But they showed, and it was a small number of men. There were no women in the study. But they showed men that had ruptured or bulging discs in their lower back. So you've heard of like a bulging disc, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like if somebody has a slip disc? Well, in this study, they gave them glucosamine sulfate. And if I'm not mistaken, it was either 18 months or 2 years duration. But they showed on, you know, before and after MRIs, that disc started to pull right back into place again. It was no longer bulging. I thought to myself, dude, you've got to be kidding me. That is phenomenal. You would think that would be on every medical billboard. I'm a pretty positive person, but I'm guessing that all the medical doctors that do low back surgery, whether you're an orthopedic surgeon or a neurosurgeon, they probably do a good job of telling everybody that comes in their door, why don't we try some glucosamine sulfate? Because this study shows it can make the bulge go away. What do we need to do surgery for? They probably do that, don't they?
Maybe so.
Okay. Well, I think if you looked at that, but the foods that are notoriously high in sulfur, that's going to be eggs and garlic. I think there are some studies that demonstrate that grass-fed beef is a win when it comes to sulfur.
Okay.
I recommend you don't buy that, though. That way you could leave more for me.
I'm
sorry. Did I revert into the selfish Roy for a second?
Ooh.
But you got broccoli and cabbage and cauliflower and onions and garlic and kale and asparagus.
Okay.
Just consider those things.
I will. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, man. Bye-bye. And, of course, the part of the topic I didn't get to is if you sit down and you're stiff as a board, that's the kidneys right there. That is the job of the kidneys, to filter and remove impurities from your blood. So it may be the blood's a little bit dirty. But I did not say she had dirty blood. That would be very offensive. The number here at the station is 903-586-5257. If you want to call and ask a question or make a comment, this program is Health Essentials. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I am good. How are you?
Doing well. Thank you so much. So, vitamin D3, that's great information. But well, I do have a question about, you know how doctors always tell us that we need to take an aspirin a day, you know, 81 milligram or whatever. What would you do in place of that? Would that still be, would that be vitamin D3 or something else?
Well, if you're trying to make sure that your blood doesn't, you know, hypercoagulate or become sticky and gunky where it doesn't flow well, meaning more
right.
prone to like a blood clot, there are things that can be done. And so, for example, garlic historically has been used. I mean, if you take garlic, you don't have to worry about vampires. Am I right about that?
I hear tell that, correct, yes.
Well, I mean, I haven't had a vampire try to attack me in the parking lot of Walmart recently.
Well, that's a good thing.
I mean,
because you never know what's in the parking lot of Walmart.
You got a good point there. I had a guy almost pull a gun on me the other day.
Really?
Yeah, I would tell that story, but nobody would believe me. But, you know, it happened.
Well, if you would behave, you wouldn't have those problems.
There's not much I can argue with on that point. I stand corrected. Humble yourself, and he will lift you up. Got it. Okay, I was wrong. I was asking for it. But if you will, consider a little bit of garlic is very famous for helping to make sure that the blood flow is much, much better in the body, less stickiness. And so from the kingdom of oils or essential fats, I think we could probably build a case that human beings, they cannot make omega-3 fatty acids, so you need to probably get those from either the food that you eat or from a supplement. So
Would that come in like coconut oil?
Well, coconut oil is a medium chain triglyceride. I'm talking about the omega-3s. That would be like cod liver oil. Or when you eat, you know how you like to make cauliflower crust salmon pizza?
Ooh, yeah.
But that would be a source of the omega-3 fatty acids. And so just think of it this way. Here you have this little fishy in the ocean minding his own business, and he says, I am tired of living near Hawaii. This water is just too clear and too beautiful. I need a challenge in my life. And so I think I'd like to swim north. And when they get to the Arctic Circle, they're thinking, not a good plan. This is a little bit too cold and frigid for me. The only thing that keeps that cod from seizing up and from freezing is if he has plenty of antifreeze to keep the blood flowing through the fish's body, and that's called cod liver oil.
Got it.
And so you could say that cod liver oil would be antifreeze to a codfish that's living in the Arctic Circle or near Antarctica. But to a human being, I mean, even back in the early 1900s, like 1910, 15, 20, cod liver oil was just the staple of everyday American life. I mean, parents saw, especially mothers, they saw tremendous benefit to giving their kids, you know, cod liver oil to keep them healthy. So cod liver oil is probably like a superfood. So if a human being took a little bit of cod liver oil, that would definitely promote better blood flow, less gunky stickiness.
Right.
And so the other thing that I might look at, you mentioned specifically the use of a baby aspirin to keep the blood thin.
Correct.
But there are side effects to taking aspirin. So probably
exactly. That's why I was asking that.
Exactly. So for those that don't know, there are some people when they take aspirin, over time it sort of burns a hole through their gut or their stomach and they start bleeding out. Not good. And so there are other fatty acids like evening primrose oil or black currant seed oil or barrage oil, and these have been shown to keep the blood flowing at a good and make sure it's not overly sticky. Now, I know this is going to sound radical, what I'm fixing to say, but I'm trying to, you know, make a salient point about the direction we're going here. If a diet is based on tons and tons of refined sugar and sweets and high fructose corn syrup, Mm-hmm. You're asking for your blood to become super, super sticky. See, diabetics, they are the ones that have more sticky blood because they have more sugar in there. And so what would you do to make sure your blood flows at a higher rate of speed and is a lot less sticky? Well, it's called eating plants or vegetables or fruits. And so there is a mineral called potassium. And so historically, when people have the lowest intake of potassium because they're not eating fruits or vegetables, then they're most vulnerable to having a stroke. Whereas compared to people that eat plenty of potassium-rich foods, well, guess what they have? They just about never have a stroke. And right. So when you have plenty of potassium, your blood literally flows through the arteries at a much higher rate of speed. And, of course, in my mind, the faster that blood can easily flow through the arteries at a higher rate of speed, that's when it's cleaner. But when blood is thicker, it becomes dirtier. Doesn't that sound ultra-scientific the way I just said that?
You are always ultra-scientific.
Dirty blood. That's my science topic for the day.
And exactly.
So, and so if a person says, okay, what's my play here? Well, one thing is you could just eat one green salad a day. If you had a salad a day, that would probably give you the base of all the potassium that you need to have radiant health, which there are studies that show that when potassium is less than ideal in a person's body, they're more prone to fatigue and pain. Mm-hmm. Just like when I was talking about vitamin D3 earlier, the two most common symptoms of all time of low levels of vitamin D are going to be fatigue that just does not resolve and go away under any circumstances, and pain that just won't go away. So, for your consideration, if we want the blood to move faster, another age-old technique is called moving. Putting one foot in front of the other, going for frequent walks. I think it's probably disastrous for a human being to sit in a chair for 10 hours a day, don't you?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. Now, if potassium, can that also be taken as a supplement?
It can, but I really don't think you have to.
Okay.
Unless you want to take alfalfa tablets, which that's rich in potassium.
Oh, okay. How much would you take?
I did not say you're like a horse that needs alfalfa hay. I didn't say that.
Uh-huh. Called me horsey again. Okay.
Oh, great. I knew he was.
I know where to find you. Remember.
All right. I'm cleaning up my act now. I don't need a gun pulled off. But, yeah, if you were to consume alfalfa, that would be just a very mineral-rich substance. That'd be a good supplement right there.
About how much? How many IUs or whatever?
I thought you were going to say bales of hay.
So I can get those.
if you take alfalfa, they come in these compressed alfalfa tablets. You can buy them at the store, and I don't know, 3 or 4 a day would probably be a good starting point.
Oh, okay. Sounds like a plan. Plus, I remember you saying at one point giving blood was help.
Oh, yeah, for men. There is one unique laboratory value that you want to look at for a man. I mean, there's other ones, but I'm just going to talk about this, and it's called hematocrit.
Mm-hmm.
And so the study showed that when that number for a man is at 42, he has a very, very low chance of his blood being thick or having a clot or having a heart attack. But if you move that number closer to 47, then you instantly double his risk for having a heart attack. And so it's like anything else. There's degrees to all this. There's mild, moderate, and severe. And so if a man had a hematocrit at 47 or above, yes, it would be in his best interest to go to the blood bank and say, I would like to make a withdrawal today. I mean, a donation.
There you go.
And the donation could be a pint of blood, but if you can bleed a pint off, that could actually greatly improve one's health. Now, I don't know if you've ever heard this before, but there was one small study done in the late 1970s, and it was done in France. Now, before everybody gets bent out of shape, just because the study was done in France doesn't mean it's not valid, okay?
Okay.
All right, I just thought some people were going to get upset over that. So, in this study, they had men that were between 30 and 45 years of age that had absolutely no interest to get up and look for a job or to go to work. They weren't motivated by anything. They could watch TV and eat Cheetos. I actually don't even know if Cheetos are in France. I just made that last part up.
There you go.
And so these men, they showed no ambition, no great desire, no motivation. They didn't want to do much of anything, and they had no desire to be intimate. That's about as much as I'm going to say on that topic.
Right.
And so they said, what would happen if we could convince these men over a six-month period to donate 4 pints of blood? And so I'm just an oversimplifier. Let's just say every month and a half, they drew off a pint of blood. Lo and behold, all of a sudden, this hormone called male testosterone, it got higher and higher and higher. And so when these men who didn't take one drug, they didn't take any hormone replacement therapy, there was no supplementation that I'm aware of, when they were bled by 4 pints of blood, all of a sudden they became normal again. They started having ambition and drive and desire and motivation to get up and do stuff. Now, to me, that's very, very intriguing, because women, they have this natural God-given way to give themselves an oil change. I mean,
right.
In a pint of, blood. But men
right,
don't.
Exactly.
So men tend to accumulate so much more iron, and iron starts the process of rusting, and the more rust you have inside, the worse things go. So that's a brilliant point you made about donating blood. I like your plan.
Well, that's because I learned it from you.
I don't remember ever bringing this topic up.
Mm-hmm.
Could have
yeah,
been,
you
could
have.
Could have been the past. Okay.
Yes, it was.
I've slept since then.
Well, thank you so much.
You're
I appreciate
welcome.
That.
I hope you have a good day. Tell your dad I said hello.
Oh, I definitely will. He's doing much better.
Oh, tell Jack. Way to go, dude. Good effort.
Yeah, he's doing really much better.
Oh,
thank
I'm
you.
So happy. Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I think Jack had this wicked cough that wouldn't go away, so that's good news. If you'd like to join me on the radio, there's time for one more phone call. It's 903-586-5257. If nobody wants to call, I'll read this to you. Okay. Back in the year 1941, so just so you know, this is not brand new information. It's been around a while. They showed there was an inverse relationship between sunlight exposure and cancer mortality. This is by Apperly in 1941. What does that mean to you and me? If you have no exposure to sunlight, that's a death sentence when you have cancer. He goes on to write in his article that vitamin D, this is 1941, by the way, vitamin D has anti-cancer effects, mediated by anti-proliferative and pro-apoptotic mechanisms. That means it promotes cells just go ahead and dying, not living as a cancer cell, which he says are augmented by modulation of nuclear receptor function enzyme action. I'm sure you love that. And limited research shows that... Okay. A researcher by the name of Grant has shown that inadequate exposure to sunlight, and hence a person having low levels of vitamin D, that's known as hypovitaminosis D, is associated with an increased risk of cancer mortality for several malignancies, namely those of the breast, the colon, the ovary, the prostate, if you're a man, the bladder, esophagus, kidney, lung, pancreas, rectum, stomach, uterus, and non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. He proposes that adequate exposure to ultraviolet light and or supplementation with vitamin D could save more than 23,000 American lives per year from a reduction in cancer mortality alone. This is from 1941. Oh my goodness. What does it take to get the word out? I've enjoyed being with you today. My name is Dr. Roy Morgan. This program is Health Essentials.